Hello, and welcome to the Three Links Oddcast, your podcast for all things having to do with Odd Fellowship. And now, here are your hosts.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another informative and inspirational episode of the Three Links Oddcast. I'm one of your hosts, Mike Dominiak.
I'm another of your hosts, Toby Hansen.
And I'm your third host, Ainsley Heilick, and we are brought to you tonight by the Heart in Hand Institute. Yes, the Heart in Hand Institute, where you can find all the things you need to read up on Odd Fellows and Odd Fellowship with the ever-growing and expanding library. Check out heartinhandinstitute.com for more.
You know, brother, I understand that you love the Heart in Hand so much, you got it tattooed literally on your hand.
I did. It was the worst 15 minutes of my life.
Now, for those of you out there who really love Odd Fellowship, but don't look forward to the pain of a palm tattoo, just go to heartinhandinstitute.com and buy a bunch of the books. The new version of the District Deputy Guide is out, and this is a really significant upgrade because it now includes information for district deputy presidents. So all of you Rebecca listeners out there, be sure and let your assembly presidents and especially your assembly vice presidents know that the District Deputies Guide now covers Rebecca assemblies as well as Grand Lodges. So today we're talking to two brothers from the great jurisdiction of Texas. We've got the Grand Master of Texas, Brother Charlie Stevenson, and we've got Brother William Plotz here from Brazos Valley, number 76, and they're going to tell us all about this brand new lodge that was chartered recently. So, Grand Master, we'll defer to you. Why don't you introduce yourself and give us a little bit of your background in Odd Fellowship?
Thank you, Brother Toby. It's a pleasure to be on tonight. So I've been Odd Fellow for 15 years. I started out at Grapevine Lodge 402 in Texas. I had a really good experience, but unfortunately with moving and work, I was another part of the state. And I thought, you know, why don't we bring Odd Fellowship back to the North Dallas area? And I revived the Bina Lodge in 2018, and it's doing really well. And once I got involved with the lodge and being Noble Grand, I decided, well, why not get involved with Grand Lodge? And I was a district deputy, and then I was Grand Chaplain, and one thing led to another, and I got in the Grand Line, and here I am. It's been an honor to serve Odd Fellowship. It's been the best experience of my life. I've made wonderful friends all across the country, even overseas, and it's been a pleasure helping other brothers start lodges like Brother Plotz with Brazos Valley. And I'm going to defer to him to talk about his experience with getting the lodge started.
Yeah, Brother William, tell us a little bit about your experience in Odd Fellowship and how you came to get this new lodge chartered.
Well, I became an Odd Fellow about 4 years ago. I've been a Freemason for several years, and that very much got me interested in fraternalism. I followed my dad into that. And I remember my mother telling me that her grandfather had been a member of the Odd Fellows fraternity in Arkansas. And I was always interested in the Odd Fellows and wanted to check it out. But as Brother Stevenson can testify, there's just not as many Odd Fellow lodges in Texas as there are a lot of other groups. Well, about 4 years ago, I decided to petition the lodge in Conroe just so that I could, you know, I wanted to get the degrees and find out what it was about. So I joined that lodge, got the degrees, and just really liked it a whole lot. You know, unfortunately at the time it was Conroe's an hour away from where I live. So I wasn't really able to be super active in it. And anyway, a couple of years later, I got a phone call by the then Grand Master saying that there were some people that were interested in starting an Odd Fellows Lodge in the Brazos Valley and asked me if I would be interested in helping out with that. So that's kind of where it started from. I knew one fellow from the Masonic Lodge who was already an Odd Fellow. He'd become an Odd Fellow in Georgia, and I got him on board, and we found some other fellows who were interested in it. And about a year ago, we got our dispensation and got started. We started with five people, and we're now up to 10. So in a year, we've doubled our membership, and we're looking forward to adding more and more.
That is fantastic. So where do all of these potential members for these new lodges come from? How do you find them? We've talked to other new lodges that get started, and a lot of them come from the Masonic tradition, like talking to the Brothers of Leatherstocking Lodge in New York. There were some Masons who found out about Odd Fellowship, said, this sounds great, and they got started. There happened to be another longtime Odd Fellow living in their town, and they said, okay, we're going to get together and start a lodge. And so they very successfully started a lodge there in New York State. And we've heard that in a lot of other cases where Masons get interested in something and decide to join the Odd Fellows, and then they end up chartering a lodge. And it sounds like that was part of your process, but where else are you finding the members for your lodge?
Well, one good thing about Bryan College Station is that we're a college town, home of Texas A&M, and we get a lot of young people from all over the state and from various other places. And, you know, while fraternalism hasn't made, you know, it's not where it was, you know, 100 years ago, I think it's made a little bit of a comeback. I think there's a lot of young people who are interested in these types of things. So I would say that's one area among young people.
So do you actively have outreach to any of the college organizations or any of the students at Texas A&M?
No, sir, not at present, not anything official. You know, most of us have kind of been recruiting among friends that we have at Lodge and people that we work with and so forth. That's really been kind of a big source right there. We have one, our secretary works for a sign company here in town, and I'd say he's brought in about three or four of our new members. They're all people that he's worked with.
Now that brings up another question, which is one of the challenges that new lodges always face is if there is not an existing building, where do they meet? So how did you solve that situation?
Well, fortunately, most the five original members, all but one of us are members of Brazos Union Masonic Lodge. And there's already a number of other groups who use that building to meet at. Eastern Star, there's a Grotto chapter that meets there. And we simply asked the lodge if they would be willing to let us use the building. And they're a good bunch of guys. They were perfectly willing and happy to let us do it. So we're very blessed in that aspect. It's nice to have a building.
Do you feel that the Oddfellow Lodge is going to grow separately from the Masonic Lodge? Like, do you believe that you're going to start seeing a different type of person wanting to be an Oddfellow that may not be attracted to Freemasonry?
I do. I think we are going to see that. In fact, I would say most of our members that we've had right now starting out have been guys who were Masons, but we're starting to see more and more who aren't. They just want to be Odd Fellows.
So you brought up a great point about using the same space that another group occupies and how if some of the members are part of that other group, how it makes things a lot more streamlined to get an Odd Fellows Lodge going if they already have existing very similar space set up, like using a Masonic hall or any other sort of lodge or hall group meeting space. The encampment that I belong to in Canton and Rebecca, they sold their building recently because it just became too much of a hassle. And now they've moved into the AmVets Hall. And so we just had our first meeting there. And I thought it would be kind of weird being in a different space, but it actually was just like, oh, it's kind of more the same.
Now that brings up another question for me. And this is related to something that I had some experience with during my term as Grand Master here in Washington, which is sometimes when you have multiple groups sharing the same space, it can be a challenge to get the kind of cooperation needed so that every group can do the activities that they need to do. Because with a new lodge, you're going to want to do activities that will promote the lodge and encourage people to join. So how do you negotiate working with the other groups? Because you've got a blue lodge and a star chapter and a grotto and all of these Masonic bodies meeting in this building. And now you've started an Oddfellows lodge there. So how are you able to coordinate all of that?
Well, one of the good things about some of these other groups, I can speak for the grotto because I happen to be a member of that organization. I'm actually the secretary of our local grotto, is really and truly grotto. We only try to have about one business meeting per quarter at the actual lodge building, because the purpose of that particular organization is to be out in the community doing social and fun type things. So we have a lot of our meetings for that group in restaurants and bowling alleys and places like that. The Eastern Star, they have a pretty regular, time that they meet there and whatnot, and we haven't had any conflicts with them and so forth.
So, Charlie, you would have been Deputy Grand Master, I suppose, when this lodge was chartered?
That's correct.
And so, from being on the executive committee at the time, how did the Grand Lodge make it possible to do this? Particularly when you're talking about starting with just five members, and oftentimes that is somewhat frowned upon by some grand body thinking it's not enough, it's going to fold as soon as we open it. So how did you decide to proceed, and what were your expectations when you greenlit this project?
I mean, those are really good questions. If you don't mind me just backing up a little bit on that to give some history. So the El Paso Lodge was revived, I think, in 2012, 2014. And the executive committee at that time was all about it, because that was the first time there was any interest in a new lodge. So they threw all resources at it. You need regalia, you need furniture, you need degree robes, whatever you need funds. They threw everything at El Paso Lodge. And it was very promising at first. They had recruited a lot of members. It looked good. But unfortunately, within a year's time, it dwindled and it was not thriving. So let me fast forward. When Plano Lodge submitted paperwork for a charter, and I had at least 10 people, the executive committee was very hesitant. Well, we did this. It didn't work out. This probably isn't going to go well either, right? Just because of what they had seen. Well, Plano's a success story, because we're up to 41 members doing really well. So it was a benefit for me to be on the executive committee to give some statistics. Yes, unfortunately, El Paso didn't pan out. That's very unfortunate. But Plano's is doing really well, and I fully support Brazos Valley. Even with 5 guys, 10 guys, they can make it happen, and let's give them the opportunity. So from a Grand Lodge perspective, it is a concern, right? Okay, resources, time, energy, you get everything together. Is it going to work out? And I really pushed it. I worked with John Woolsey. He's a past Grand Master now. He really was promoting it. Our junior past Grand Master, Troy Pennington, he was all for it. And so we really did our best to promote it and get it going. And I was excited to be down there to help with the institution. And you have some red tape from a Grand Lodge perspective, but I think if you have enough positive feedback and a lot of people that are looking towards the benefit of the order growing, you can make it happen. Hopefully that answered your question.
Do you feel like the distance between El Paso and where the Grand Lodge is located might have been a factor in that lodge having less of a chance of survival? Let everybody at home know like how far apart we're talking distance wise, since Texas is a large jurisdiction that covers many, many, many of our regular jurisdictions.
Absolutely. El Paso, I think, is closer to Los Angeles than to Dallas, Texas. I mean, it's out there. So it was really hard for them. They didn't have the support that they should have had. Now you have New Mexico with some lodges that were closer in than the Texas lodges. So, I mean, it's just unfortunate. I think that was a major factor. If they had been closer in, they probably would have done better and had more support. And with Brazos Valley being closer to the Grand Lodge building, which is in Corsicana, what's that about? What, 2 hours, William? Is that about right?
Yeah, it's about 2 hours. It's not a bad drive at all, really.
I mean, you have Conroe Lodge, you have a few other lodges, you have Austin Lodge, you have lodges in the area. So I really do think that was a major factor.
So basically things in the day trip range of location is a little bit easier to keep that contact alive.
Absolutely.
I think also, I mean, coming from the other side of the paternal land first as well, I think when you start with a group of people who already have a fraternal relationship and are familiar with running a lodge and operating a lodge, it's not as difficult to get going. I mean, you can give all the rituals and furniture and regalia you want. If people don't have a lot of experience, then it's hard to navigate running a new lodge because you have to do so much work with fewer people.
Absolutely. You know, crossover is a really good way to go. And sorry, I keep talking about playing a lodge. We're supposed to be talking about Brazos Valley, but we share space with the Elks Lodge. And we also share space with the Knights of Pythias Lodge. And there's been a lot of good crossover because you're familiar with fraternalism. It's not scary and just, I have no idea what this is. So you have a point of reference. And also you can benefit from, if you have older members, many hands make light work, right? So if you all work together for community service, highway cleanup, you name it, you're able to come together. And so Plano has become more of a fraternal center for us, and it's worked out really well.
Now, one thing that I find that's interesting there is that the groups that have been successful recently in your jurisdiction, which is Plano 114 and now the Brazos Valley 76, those are both groups that had connections with other fraternal groups. Like you mentioned in Plano, the Elks and the Knights of Pythias. So you've already got a critical mass there. One of the things which made Odd Fellowship successful in the past was you always had at least two units that were together. You'd usually have an Odd Fellows and a Rebecca Lodge, so they could work together on projects. Later in the Odd Podge, I'm going to be talking about something that we participated in my jurisdiction that was very successful at raising the profile of fraternalism in the jurisdiction and in the particular area where it's held, because there was a fraternal fair that was organized by an Eastern Star chapter over in a different part of the state of Washington. Big turnout, and even better, really good media coverage. The local TV station came out and did a story about it. Well, in a lot of places where you're just chartering an Odd Fellows Lodge, there isn't a Rebecca Lodge to work with. There isn't this other group to work with. You don't have three lodges that are all supporting an encampment where the encampment can help coordinate and plan things like the encampment in Dallas does. So it's an interesting perspective to say this one isolated lodge in El Paso, which is geographically very isolated from the rest of Texas. To put it in perspective, El Paso is roughly as far west as Denver, Colorado, which is just amazingly far from the other side of Texas. And so to get to El Paso is a real challenge if you're in the DFW area, or I mean, even more of a challenge if you're down in Houston. Now, when I was Grand Master of Washington, we have a lodge. I love these guys. They are so awesome. It's Mount Constitution number 88, and it's on Orcas Island, which is in the San Juan Islands. And I am making a visitation to that lodge coming up in June as their district deputy. It is a multi-day process to visit that lodge because you have to get a reservation on the ferry boat several months in advance, and then you can't just run up there and run back. Like, if there were a problem with any other lodge in the state, I could drive there within 6 hours. But Mount Constitution is a multiple day commitment to go visit that lodge. So I understand what it's like when you're saying, yeah, we started with a great group in El Paso, but they didn't have any other lodges around them. There were no other methods of support. There weren't the other fraternal groups that they were meeting in the same building with. And it's very hard because any weakness becomes multiplied when you don't have that companionship. And it sounds like the groups in Plano and College Station are doing really well because they have that sort of framework to be a part of. Now, here's another question for you. Brother Ivan Kotcher, who was a member of the lodge in Dallas, recently relocated to Seattle and joined my home lodge. So I've had a lot of fun talking to him about his experiences as an odd fellow in Texas. He told me that there is something about Texas and about the people that makes fraternalism a lot easier to promote and share. He said that people in Texas are used to doing things together in groups in a way that people, especially here in the Pacific Northwest, are not. And I was hoping that maybe both of you might be able to speak to that and how much you think that's accurate. Brother William, do you want to offer something on that?
Sure. Yeah, I would say that's pretty accurate. I'm a sixth generation Texan, and fraternalism, it's a big part of most any community in Texas. I mean, if you drive into any town in Texas, you're going to be hit immediately with certain things. You're going to see a First Baptist church, a Methodist church. You're going to see a Masonic lodge. And oftentimes you're going to see an Elks lodge or a Knights of Pythias or an Oddfellows lodge. I mean, those things like that are very much a part of our communities here. That's the framework I grew up in.
And Grandmaster Charlie, how about you?
I totally agree. I mean, each town you drive into, you're going to see the sign, you know, welcome to Mahaya. And you have a Rotary Club, an Elks Lodge, an Oddfellows Lodge, a Masonic Lodge. It's like that scene from Back to the Future, you know, the sign with all the different groups that meet there. And that's been our experience in North Dallas with all these different events. There's always a festival. There is a, you know, centennial event for a town, and there's always booths and people are always in groups, be it the church or a fraternal group or a civic group. And so I totally agree with what Ivan was talking about. I do miss him. Ivan and I are good friends. Next time you see him, tell him I say hi.
I will do that. We just did the second degree on Thursday night at the lodge. And I tell you what, Ivan is fantastic at Degree Work. He has been such a great fit for our lodge because my home lodge, Ballard Alki 170, we do the degree work very seriously. One thing we talk about a lot on the podcast here is how it's important to do not just good degree work, but to make it a special experience for the candidates. So the lodge that I first joined and that I'm still a member of places a really high emphasis on that. So when we did the second degree, we had the candidates go out to the ante room and we did the full traditional quiz where you bring them in and make them prove themselves in the first degree and then send them back out to the ante room. Because when you do that, it creates such a sense of accomplishment for the candidate. It's not just a lecture with some more information they're supposed to pay attention to. It becomes a real accomplishment. And then we did the full dramatic presentation of the degree. And Brother Ivan is a really, really gifted actor. He was wonderful at performing his part in that degree.
I totally agree. I was honored that he did all my encampment degrees, and they were just wonderful. And his memory work, like he just, everything by memory, just outstanding.
Yeah, that's another thing that really impressed me. I don't really have any of the degree work memorized, but when I was Grand Master, I did all of my floor stuff for the installations of officers. I did all of that from memory because I thought it was important to do a good presentation of the installation ceremony. And it's so much easier to do that when you're not fumbling around with a book going, oh, how do I do this? You know, it just, it looks good. It's more impressive to the audience. And it's really an amazing thing when it's done like that from memory.
Absolutely.
I'm going to jump topics slightly here just because I do that. And I won't even try to make a segue like Ainsley usually tries to make. I'll just go ahead and jump because I'm really curious about something. Starting from a bunch of guys that are in a Masonic lodge, this is going to mainly go after William, so be prepared. My question is, as this year has progressed of having a lodge, do you feel that your lodge is trending more towards our traditional Oddfellow Lodge, like say Waxahachie 80, or towards a more, this is going to be different than what we're used to having in a Masonic type setting, and we're going to be more mixed of who comes in and have it be more like one of those lodges? So I'm really wondering if you kind of have a feel like, is your lodge going to be more parallel with what you're used to, or is it going to be more divergent from what you're used to?
This is actually something that me and the brothers have talked about a lot, because we all agree that one thing that we want is for our lodge to be an Oddfellows Lodge. This isn't an extension of Masonry or an appendant body. It's its own fraternity, and we want it to stand on its own feet. And while we're grateful, since, you know, we all have a background in Freemasonry, and certainly that is a good place to recruit for potential Oddfellows, it's not the only place. And we would like this to be, to stand on its feet as an Oddfellows Lodge. That's kind of how I'd like to see his trend.
So do you have like a model of another lodge in Texas that you look at and say, if we were really successful, we would be more like X Lodge, and that's sort of where we're shooting for?
Well, I wouldn't say a specific one, but certainly we look at all of our sister lodges around us, and we want to mimic what they're doing well and do the same thing.
Yeah, I know it's a difficult question, but I wasn't sure because every lodge develops its own culture, but you sometimes have a tendency to be different from some of your neighbors and similar to others of your neighbors. And it's kind of what makes lodges have their own characters. It's who the individuals are and also how they interact. And I know as for the Grand Master, you have a jurisdiction which has some very varied lodges. There's not as much uniformity among the Odd Fellow lodges of Texas.
That is very true. Every lodge is very different. They have different strengths and weaknesses, different cultures. I mean, obviously, our ritual and, you know, friendship, love, and truth is there at every lodge. But it's interesting to see during my official visits across the state how different we are, but how similar we are, if that makes any sense. There's a dichotomy there. Some things work for one lodge and they don't work for another lodge. And I know you mentioned Waxahachie Lodge. They are doing a phenomenal job. They're growing, but their culture is great and it works for them, but that's not always the same with another area. It's interesting to see the differences.
Well, yeah, that would be something that may not work as well in Austin.
Mm-hmm.
So that brings me to my next question. So since lodge cultures are oftentimes based off of the members who are kind of spearheading the thing, and then it just kind of naturally develops off of what their interests are, because you're going to bring people in that are mm-hmm. into interests that they're into. How did the lodge culture for the Brazos Valley Lodge develop? Since obviously there's going to be the Masonic influence, but from there, what were the sort of other sort of flavors that you're going to start mixing in?
Well, a lot of it is, you know, we're kind of guys from similar type areas. Like I said, about four or five of the guys all work together, you know, same kind of professions and so forth. I'd say that's definitely something that kind of gives our lodge its character. The background of Texas A&M in our town, that certainly affects the culture of everything in the Brazos Valley. A lot of different things.
Would you say that the lodge is interested or slightly disinterested in having a larger interaction with the college? And I ask this question because I know other university towns where you would think, wow, there's so many people who are interested in fraternalism. They join all these things. They join surface fraternities. They do all of this stuff. And the whole Odd Fellows of the Philippines was sort of built off of university culture. And yet many lodges that are near universities kind of feel like, well, what's the point in bringing people in who are going to be gone within a couple years of joining the lodge? You know, what does it do for us? And I'm so just kind of curious, like, how you guys feel about that pool of potential Odd Fellows?
Well, honestly, at this point, since we're brand new and just starting out, I guess our main potential pool for future Odd Fellows is pretty much anyone we can put our toe in at this point. It's interesting that you say that, because in the Masonic Lodge, that is an issue that we've had. We have a lot of young men that they start out at A&M, and, you know, dad or our grandpa was a Mason. So they come and petition our lodge and they want to, you know, be a part of it. And that has been the case. We have a lot of great young men who come and join, and in a couple of years, they're gone. But they take it with them, and there's always more that come in after them. And a lot of them come back. So I would hope we could see the same thing with Odd Fellows, men and women.
I would like to share something about that, because here in my jurisdiction of Washington, we have a lodge in Ellensburg number 20. They have made an amazing transformation. They went from a lodge of a couple old guys meeting around the kitchen table once a month and not even telling the Grand Lodge when they met. When I was Deputy Grand Master, I went to one of their stated meetings only to find out that was not an Odd Fellows Lodge night. It was the Kittitas County Vegetarian Club potluck. So I showed up there and ate some lentil stew, and there happened to be a couple members of the lodge there. And I talked to them and said, hey, I actually want to come and see what your lodge does and how you function. They're like, we don't like the Grand Lodge looking around here. I was like, trust me on this. I understand. I've dealt with other lodges that are very suspicious of the Grand Lodge. I am not here to be your enemy. I'm here to be your friend. And so they told me. And so I went back in a couple weeks on a Thursday and not a Tuesday. And that's what I saw. Six elderly people sitting around a table in this big, huge building in a college town that has all of these people. Well, this lodge has completely reinvented themselves over the last couple of years. They now do all ritualistic work. They wear the regalia. They have formal meetings with correct opening and closing. They are gaining new members all the time. And one thing that they have done is they have really been open to having members of the university community join the lodge, because they see it as being this sprinkler system that brings these young people in, gives them the fraternal experience, and then sends them back home. This is a fantastic opportunity to spread water and nutrients on the fields of Odd Fellowship all around the jurisdiction, because they are centrally located in a college town. Well, it's kind of the same thing there in Bryan and College Station. You've got one of the country's best engineering schools there in Texas A&M. And we just lost both of our listeners in Austin when I said that. But they come to this place, they get this education, and if you can give them the fraternal experience, they take that back with them. Now, on the other side of this, I was talking with Joyce Pruhl, the Grand Secretary of Wisconsin. They recently had to close their lodge in Madison, Wisconsin. Well, of course, Madison is another college town. And you would think a big building with a whole bunch of potential for activity right in the middle of a college town would be a hotbed for Odd Fellowship. But no, that lodge was not very open to having young people come in and have them participate, have new things happen. And as a result, that lodge in Madison, Wisconsin is now gone. And there's probably some new upscale bar and grill going into that building. You know, again, on one of the previous episodes, I talked about Nampa Lodge number 40 in Idaho and how they are a strong and active lodge. One of the things that they do that keeps the lodge strong and active, they have a couple of really nice old pool tables upstairs in the members' lounge. And one of the young members came in and said, "Hey, I've got friends who like to shoot pool. Can I bring them down to the lodge on Friday night?" And the lodge said, "Absolutely, bring them in." And I bet you anything, within the next year, those guys who are coming to hang out and shoot pool at the lodge hall are going to be like, "Why don't we just join? Why don't we just join this lodge and keep it going so we have this space?" You know, the more that our lodges can interact, especially one of the best things, if you're running a lodge in a college town, like Mike, you're in West Virginia. Is there a lodge in Morgantown?
There is, Monongalia number 10.
Yeah. What could be better than putting up flyers at the college and saying, "Hey, free pizza on Friday night at the Odd Fellows Lodge. Come down and eat." You know, so you spend $100 on pizza. You get a bunch of young people in there. They look at the cool stuff on the wall. They say, "Oh, how can we get involved with this?" You hand them the application. There's your path forward if you're in a college town.
Yeah.
But so many lodges don't want to do that. They're so afraid of the new people coming in.
You know, we had a Odd Fellows Lodge in State College, Pennsylvania, which is where Penn State is located. Mm-hmm. And their building was directly across the street from campus, right on the main drag downtown. And they sold it and moved into a business park near a retirement apartment building, and built a building that didn't have a lodge hall. It had space for renting out for meetings and banquets, and they would just set up some chairs in there whenever they felt like having a meeting. And it did die off. And it was such a shame, because They weren't bad guys. They were just thinking, well, there's not good parking downtown. It's hard to get in and out of the building. It's old. It's hard to maintain. Let's go somewhere else where it's going to be easier. We can have parking. We'll make all this money from people coming there. And yeah, they had their pancake breakfast, and all the people came from the retirement place next door and came over and had pancakes. And if anybody younger did come and join, they were the one person who would. And by the time a second person might show up, they'd already stopped coming because there just really wasn't any connection for them. And it really is a waste because we've seen it work in other places. It's just hard to get started. You need one or two. And the Masonic Lodge and State College brings in college students, and they don't have any problem doing it, and graduate students and all of that. But it takes making that connection. And I don't know, for being in a college town, I certainly don't have any advice on how to make it work because, it seems to be very individual. But it does seem to be a resource that we could look at because people don't necessarily want to join one of the drinking fraternities. They have honor societies, they have co-ed service fraternities and things that they join. You'd think, I'm not going to say you want to rush the IOF, but there is sort of a culture that, is there, and maybe being able to do things on campus. One of the things I tried to get State College Lodge to do was, if you don't want to do that, that's fine. Find some people and start a second lodge that meets on a different night that you don't have to deal with them, but at least you have them joining and bringing revenue into the same building. I don't think that would be the best solution, but it's better than not having them at all. But anyway, I digress on that.
Anyone who's ever been to Sovereign Grand Lodge realizes that you cannot rush the IOOF. We function in our own way, on our own timeline. I mean, when you've got 20 electric scooters all waiting outside the banquet hall to get in, you realize just how little you can rush the IOOF.
Just the elevator rush in the morning.
But we have all the different scholarship programs, and we have different things that make us a more attractive organization than some of the other ones that are out on these campuses. And it just seems a shame that we don't manage to pull it off, because the rest of the country would benefit. You're joining the lodge in College Station, but when you're done and you go move somewhere else, you're probably going to go to another town that may or may not have Odd Fellows, and you might be the starting person for that, or the person who reinvigorates the lodge wherever it is that you go for work. And the same is true in here in West Virginia. There's all those students up there in Morgantown. They're not going to be there forever, but they're probably going to stay in West Virginia and go to another town.
That's right. And they may be the spark that ignites the blaze that keeps Odd Fellowship glowing for years to come.
Which, speaking of blazes, kind of have to take a big leap backwards and say, as you're rebuilding Odd Fellowship in Texas and getting lodges restarted, you're talking about two of them now. What is at the historic heart of Odd Fellowship in Texas?
That's a really good question. The one constant that you see with the history is Odd Fellows would come into a community. This is back when it was the Wild West. They would develop schools. They would start a cemetery. They would build roads. They would take care of invalids and make sure that people that were sick had someone to care for them. And I can't tell you how many towns I've gone through, and there's still an Odd Fellows cemetery that's being maintained. And if a lodge closes down, Grand Lodge takes care of that, and we make sure that that still continues. So that's a really big thing in Texas. Now, we used to have a widows and orphans home. That closed down, oh, I think 91 is when we closed down the school. We had a nursing home and a retirement home. The nursing home, we sold within the last couple of years, but we still have a retirement home that's doing really well. So we're trying. Those are our anchors. We really do care about taking care of those in need. And you used to have to be an Odd Fellow to join the retirement home or be a resident or the school, but that went away. We wanted to take care of those that just needed help. So I think that answers your question, but I really enjoy going down to the retirement home. It's in Ennis, Texas. It's about an hour from Grand Lodge building, and it's not that far from Dallas. It's about an hour. And we have a lot of functions there. We have a big Christmas dinner, and we try to put on a program for the residents. We have another event in September, which is kind of like a homecoming. And talking about that, I came back from the ex-student association meeting that was at the Grand Lodge building. It's their homecoming. It's for all the former students of the orphanage. And now they've dwindled down, right? They've died off, but their families still show up. And it was really moving to talk to all these families and how they expressed their love for Odd Fellowship and how we helped their family succeed. And they wouldn't be here if it wasn't for us. And I was very overwhelmed with the comments today. And that's still going. The school closed down years ago. They're still coming down and showing their support for Odd Fellowship. So, I think those are the main items in Texas. I'm curious to hear about other jurisdictions, what the draw is, if it's a similar story or not.
It's a question that, I mean, you might be familiar with our episode that we had for the A Young Man's Benefit, talking about, the way that benefits worked before. And as you're talking about that school, when we did things for working people, and if they had a problem and we took care of their kids or their widows or whatever it was, yeah, they're going to keep coming back for decades. When you're taking care of people who are in their last decade, they're not going to be coming back, for longer. So it's not that it doesn't have value to do these things for our older members. It does. It has value. But at the same time, it's not particularly something that younger working people who are struggling day to day see as a benefit that they're going to make use of. And we've talked about this before. Some places you have a job and you get benefits and you get vacation time, or maybe you do have child care or something like that for you to be able to work. But there's lots of professions that's not the case. And it's very expensive or difficult to get involved with those for us as an organization. But at the same time, we do see, like you're talking about with the school, and we've seen it here in West Virginia, we had the orphans home as well, that when you've done things for families that had younger children and you help take care of them and get them going, it has, a decades-long involvement. And when we interviewed Past Sovereign Grandmaster George Glover, he talked about that and, the involvement that had, for the younger time and how that carried him all the way through. And I don't know for your jurisdiction, if you thought about how to sort of go back to your history and find a way to have the Odd Fellows connect with the communities in the way that it used to, where it really was about building the community for the people who are struggling day to day.
There's been a lot of discussions between, brothers and sisters about that. There's no plan to implement anything on a large scale, but I do know a lot of lodges are reaching out in the community and they're trying to help those in need in a variety of ways. It's tough. I mean, things have changed, with benefit societies compared to how they used to be before privatized insurance. It's a different world, but you can at least help families that need help, right? I know that there was one community where a family, there was a house fire. They lost everything. They needed clothes. They needed food. They needed a place to stay. And I know that a lodge came forward and they passed the hat and they made sure that family was okay for at least a year. They didn't want recognition. They didn't publicize it, but I know that they made a huge difference for that family. And I hope that lives on in that memory and makes a impact going forward. So it would be nice to, on a large scale, to come together and implement some things and bring back some of our benevolence that we used to do on more of a large scale.
Now, it's just about time for us to take a break here. But when we come back from the break, we'll do our shout out. And then I'm hoping you'd indulge us with a little bit of Texas history, because I've always heard that there were some important early Texans who were Odd Fellows. So I'm hoping you might be able to tell us a little bit about that after this break and our message from the Heart in Hand Institute. Hello, friends. It's your old pal Toby here. I know what you're thinking. You're asking yourself where you can get trusted, reliable information about Odd Fellowship, just like Grandpa used to have. Well, friends, I have the answer. The fine folks at the Heart in Hand Institute have put in years of research to compile the finest guides to Odd Fellowship. Their first title, The Odd Fellows Primer, has become the standard for new members learning about the Order. Their District Deputy Grand Master Guide has become the most popular training guide for district deputies, and now, their latest release has garnered attention from all around the fraternal world. The Emblems of Odd Fellowship was originally written by noted author John Michael Greer in 1998, and was recently re-released with all new artwork by Ainsley Hylick. This book takes a comprehensive look at the history and meaning of the various symbols of Odd Fellowship, including the old symbols not used anymore, and all of the Rebecca, Encampment, and Canton symbols. This book has already garnered great acclaim in Odd Fellowship and is sure to become a treasured part of your fraternal library. Make sure you have a copy for yourself for personal study. Maybe your lodge needs a few copies to hand out to new members. And what could be a better grandmaster gift? Maybe your local library would appreciate a donation of a copy. Despite its thorough treatment of its subject matter, the book is an easy read of less than 70 pages. The handsome hardcover ensures its durability for years to come. To get your copy, visit your favorite online book retailer or check it out directly from the Heart in Hand Institute on their website at www.heartinhandinstitute.com. Remember, whenever you need information about Odd Fellowship, trust the Heart in Hand Institute. They do the research so you can be an informed Odd Fellow.
And welcome back, and thank you to the Heart and Hand Institute for that lovely sponsor hit we just had. And now it is time for one of our favorite parts of every episode, and that is the lodge shout out. And today, because we're going to be shouting out a lodge in the jurisdiction of Texas, we are fortunate to have the Grand Master of Texas to go ahead and give us that shout out. So go ahead, Grand Master Charlie.
Thank you, Brother Mike. First, I'd like to say that I love all the lodges in my jurisdiction, but I would like to shout out to Plano Lodge number 114, because they're going to have a car show on June 1st from 11 to 3 p.m. in the Plano area near the Lodge Hall, and they're going to raise some funds for some charity, and I encourage everyone that's in the area to come check it out. It should be a great event. Thank you.
And I'm going to encourage all the lodges, encampments, cantons, heck, even sanctorums, if you want to do that, or duchies, I'll even take them. If you're doing something, let us know about it. Get it put on the air here, and we can get it out there. If you give us some notice, we'll make sure your shout out is given to you prior to your event going on, if we know about it, because having people find out about it makes it more successful. So all of you out there that have anything going on, I don't care if it's just, you know, you're going to make some pancakes, you let us know. We'll try to include it.
Absolutely. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can look us up on Instagram or Facebook, or you can actually use old-fashioned email, just like Grandma used to do. Our email address is the Arabic numeral 3, linksodcast@gmail.com. So linksodcast@gmail.com. Please tell us about what your lodge is doing. One of the comments we get all the time on this podcast is how inspirational it is for other lodges to hear what goes on in the various lodges around the world and finding out about great things that they're doing, sharing the ideas, and just a general reminder that Odd Fellowship is still thriving in many places with lodges doing some great things. So please get that information to us. We love doing the shout out and sharing the good work that's happening in Odd Fellowship.
And I'm going to add, because I have to jump in again. When we say doing great things, we really mean doing things that bring revitalization back to your lodge and get things going. It doesn't have to be a major thing. It doesn't have to be some giant community event that you're doing. If what you did was go down and clear some of the scrub brush away from the front of your building, or clean the windows, or maybe put a fresh coat of paint on the door, or maybe you decided to, you know, do a degree in full form again. Any of those things is worth celebrating and hearing about, because all across all of the jurisdictions, there's going to be a lodge or an encampment or a canton or what have you that is just trying to do something and they're not sure where to start. And hearing what you've done will get it going. So I'm not saying don't tell us if you're doing something really fantastic, but also don't feel like what you're doing isn't enough. If it's helping you get energized again, it's enough for anybody to hear about.
I remember something that past Sovereign Grand Master John Miller told me. We both attended the Grand Lodge sessions in Montana one year, and he was talking to me about his home lodge and how they had started doing a roast beef dinner once a month. And the first event that they held, only about three people showed up to the roast beef dinner, and it was all the family of the people who had prepared the dinner. And everybody in the lodge was very dejected. And John talked to him and said, hey, this is only the first one. We start with this, and then we keep doing it, and we keep building. And eventually it turned into a major community event, and a lot of people started showing up, and then they got interested in the lodge, and then they ended up joining the lodge, and it became a bigger and bigger and bigger event. He also gave me a very important tip to doing events like that. He said they would set the tables for eight, but they'd only put seven dinner rolls in the basket, because he said there's always somebody who's not going to have a dinner roll, and if you put out that eighth roll, somebody will feel obligated to eat it. So you can save a little money there by not putting out that eighth dinner roll.
He has never met me.
I was going to say, what was going to happen is somebody's going to lift that basket up and say, hey, can we get some more dinner rolls?
And he said, that's your point of contact right there. If somebody says, oh, we need more dinner rolls, then somebody from the Odd Fellows Lodge comes over and says, oh, you need more dinner rolls? Let me tell you something about Odd Fellowship while I'm giving you dinner rolls. The man was brilliant. So we're here talking about the new lodge in Texas. And since we have the esteemed Grand Master of Texas on the show, I teased this before the break. I have heard that there were some important figures in Texas history who belonged to the Odd Fellows. And I was wondering if you might happen to know anything about that. Obviously, you're not the Texas state historian, but it might be interesting to share something like that.
Oh, absolutely. So you have Sam Houston. He was an Odd Fellow. You have Anston Jones, who was president of the Republic of Texas. And you had many others. You had Jacob Day Cordova, who was very instrumental in bringing Odd Fellowship to Texas. And He has an interesting story. I mean, he started in New Orleans and then came to Texas and started the first lodge. I think it was a Lone Star Lodge number one. You have to forgive me. I think that was 1838. So you have a lot of movers and shakers in the early history and during the time of the Alamo and, come and take it in Gonzales that were Odd Fellows. And I actually was visiting Gonzales Lodge number 38 a couple of weeks ago, and in their cemetery, there was probably at least 20 Odd Fellows that had fought for, Texas independence. A lot of history there. So very instrumental, but you find a lot of crossover. A lot of those guys were involved with other fraternal groups, and it's the same thing. You bring your values to a community, and you start a school, and you build a cemetery, and you help those in need. I think that's the main theme in our organization, and so Texas history and Odd Fellowship are very intertwined.
That's fantastic. And to all of our listeners in Texas, because Texas is one of our top download locations, it is the patriotic duty of all Texans to join the Odd Fellows.
Absolutely.
There you go. Texas was founded by loyal and patriotic Odd Fellows. So the way to connect with that history and continue it is to go out there and join the Odd Fellows.
Couldn't agree more.
So, speaking of which, now that we're going to have millions of Texans joining the order, what is the process like for getting a lodge started? Now, you've been through this a lot recently in Texas. So, what would you tell the people who are listening to this? Because a lot of times, people will find this podcast when they're looking for information about Odd Fellowship because they're curious, but they live in an area that doesn't have a lodge anymore. So, go through the process for getting a lodge started and kind of what it takes to put that in motion.
So, from the Grand Lodge perspective, we need to make sure that this is legitimate and you're serious, right? It's one thing to say, yeah, I want to be an Odd Fellow. I can't wait. Let's do it. But there's a lot of effort. You have to find a meeting location. You have to learn the ritual. You have to figure about opening and closing. You have to worry about annual reports and semi-annual reports. You have to learn about how Grand Lodge works and what the interaction is. And it takes some effort, And so if you have five guys or, five brothers and sisters, or you have 10 brothers and sisters and they want to do it, not only do you have to worry about, okay, did we fill the quota for the paperwork to get it started, but you need leadership. And you also need to have a line of leadership. If you have one person coming as Noble Grand, but no one else is willing to come in behind the Noble Grand, that can cause a problem. That can cause a void, and the lodge can kind of implode on itself. You need to really structure it. Okay, this is the, 2 to 3 year plan, what we're trying to accomplish. Do we have the people to continue all the roles that need to be filled? And do we have someone that's good with paperwork? Because that's just the nature of the beast. You're going to have to turn in paperwork to Grand Lodge, and that goes on to Sovereign Grand Lodge. So there's a lot of moving parts. So that's what I've seen. I've seen, like, okay, yeah, I want to do it. Let's make it happen. Versus, okay, well, you're going to really have to have a commitment and move forward with all these different moving parts.
So, when I was getting my lodge chartered back about 9-ish years ago at this point, the Grand Lodge had appointed a deputy to my lodge for the first year to basically be our training wheels, school of instruction, kind of make sure we do the ritual correctly, make sure we file our reports on time, and how to fill out the reports, because your first time filling out an annual report's kind of daunting. Does your jurisdiction provide any sort of mentorship like that, or any sort of kind of hands-on approach to make sure the training wheels come off and then just let them go, or do you kind of run along beside them for a while?
It took a little bit of effort for us at first. I mean, when we first heard, okay, where's your semi-annual report? Well, what are you talking about? And where's your lodge seal? What do you mean? You know, I had been an Odd Fellow, and a few of the other ones had been Odd Fellow, because we had some transplants from Grapevine Lodge, which is on the other side of the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex in Plano. And but none of us had dealt with the paperwork. We knew about opening and closing, but we had no idea about the reporting or how that was done. But we were able, Grand Lodge worked with us, and we had one wonderful Odd Fellow, Richard Johnson, who had some experience, and he was appointed our lodge deputy. And he really was instrumental and a mentor to say, hey, you know, you need to do this, you know, and I recommend you doing this. And he really kind of guided us first the first 2 years. And if it wasn't for him, I don't know if we would have been successful. I mean, as you know, all that stuff in the background that has to get done is a lot of work. I love degree work. I love the opening and closing, the fellowship, but paperwork is part of the animal, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, spoken like a true grandmaster. Now, Brother William, was there anything that you wanted to add to the process of getting the lodge started?
You know, just one thing that I would add is I'm really grateful for our Grand Lodge up in Corsicana. They were extremely, really friendly and really helpful, because, you know, we're still down here in Bryan, we're kind of like fish that have just been yanked out and thrown in the bottom of the boat. We're kind of flopping around trying to figure things out still. But they have been extremely helpful. And I would say that our Grand Secretary, he has been very good about calling and checking on us and, you know, helping us when we get something wrong. He's always been real good about, you know, I want to help y'all any way I can. And it's been a good experience. Like I said, we're still figuring it out, but our Grand Lodge has been very helpful.
So the message there is that Grand Secretaries are really the unsung heroes of Odd Fellowship.
This is very true.
Yeah. And no comment from Mike about that.
No comment.
But you didn't disagree either.
I think it's a fine line to walk, to be Grand Secretary, to not interfere with the duties of your District Deputy Grand Masters and your Grand Master, who should be taking the lead on promoting and assisting lodges. You know, it's fine for Grand Secretary when it comes to paperwork to be, you know, the Mr. Expert on the paperwork. But I know personally, I don't want to usurp the power of the Grand Master or the District Deputies in building that relationship that a lodge is supposed to have through the hierarchy, and not have it be that, well, this is a new lodge to start is going to be my pet, and I'm going to, you know, basically shepherd it through because I'm the guy that's always around. They need to be able to work with a changing district deputy and a new grand master every year. So yeah, grand secretaries are important, but I think we want to make sure that they stay in their place.
Now, I've got another question. Both of you have had fairly recent experience with starting new lodges. Aside from what Brother Ainsley asked about, which is kind of the nuts and bolts of operating the lodge, how do you teach new people in a new lodge what it means to be an Odd Fellow? Because for most of us, when we join an existing lodge, we learn through observation. So we see what the other older, more experienced members are doing. That's the way I learned Odd Fellowship, because I happened to join a lodge with some really wonderful and brilliant senior members. But if you're starting a new lodge, you don't necessarily have that same brain trust and a group of experienced Odd Fellows that you can watch a couple times a month and learn how everything functions. So how did you approach that, both with the lodge in Plano and the new one down in College Station?
Very good questions. And that was a concern, because we don't have a whole section of pass grants to pull information from, or a lodge secretary that had been there for 20 or 30 years that was cantankerous, and this is how you do things. We kind of had to learn how we went, you know, as we went along. Early on, we had mentorship. You know, those that had been a member of the order kind of teamed up with the younger guys we were bringing in and kind of just taught them the process. I also know that I put together a packet. And the packet gave a little history of Texas Odd Fellowship, history of Odd Fellowship in the Plano area before it demised, because there used to be a lodge there that demised in 83. Those that were buried in the cemetery, what we used to do for the community, and kind of like not long-range planning, but the goal of what we were trying to do. And that really helped. You gave a little packet after they did their initiatory degree, and you talk to them about everything, and you kind of assigned a mentor. That really made a difference. At this point, even though we don't have a, you know, 20 past grands sitting there against the wall during our meetings, there's about 18 people showing up to our meetings, and we're all trying to help each other out. So I think the mentorship was key. I mean, honestly, for us, if we didn't have the support of Grapevine Lodge, where I started out, I mean, that was key to bring over some of that knowledge base.
All right, Brother William.
I would echo a lot of what Brother Stevenson was saying. I know that as Noble Grand, one of the things I find myself saying over and over again to the brothers is, hey, I'm learning right along with you. You know, I'm still fairly new to Odd Fellowship, and, you know, just constantly reaching out to, you know, our leadership and so forth, and not being afraid to ask questions.
Are you making use of things like the manual of instruction?
Oh, yes, sir.
All right. Well, that's good. I like to hear that those things are being used, because we have a lot of really great materials that it seems like don't always make it to where it needs to go. And the stage directions and the little things that you would learn from an older member are in things like the Odd Fellows Manual of Instruction.
Now, our secretary got a really nice packet of information and stuff from our Grand Lodge that has been very, very helpful.
Excellent.
That's wonderful. Now, got to ask, what do you expect on the horizon for Odd Fellowship in Texas? Do you think there are going to be more lodges chartered? Do you think you're going to rise up and absorb the Grand Lodge of Oklahoma in a hostile takeover? You know, I'd say, what do you imagine is going to be happening kind of in the short term, and then looking a little bit beyond that?
I defer to William on this. So, truly, that's another wonderful question. So, honestly, it has been a little sad within the last couple of weeks. I've had to pick up some charters from some lodges that have demised that had a rich history that has been around a very long time. And I kind of look at that lodge hall as I'm getting the charter and just thinking about the membership and what can we do to bring back that gusto, that life that was there that made that lodge thrive for so many years before it demised. And I mean, obviously it's because membership died out, membership got complacent. They weren't trying to reach out to the community. But seeing Plano and Brazos Valley, and there's some interest in some other places in our jurisdiction, I'm seeing that with the younger generation, there's an interest in, well, what was this organization that my grandparents were involved in? It seems interesting. There's some mystique. It seems the aesthetics are interesting. I kind of like that. Now, I mean, unfortunately, I've heard a lot of people say, well, the younger generation, they like everything new. But no, I think there's a good percentage that's interested in this tradition. They're rediscovering things. They're rediscovering our symbolism. And I really do think that there's an upswing. I really do think there are going to be some more lodges chartered in Texas. I've already been talking to a really good brother, Garrett Height, that's a transplant from Plano that's now in Durant, Oklahoma. And he's like, I want to bring back the lodge that was here in Durant many years ago. And he's like, I have five brothers that want to do it. And I'm like, well, I wish you were south of the Red River because it could help you out a little bit more. But let's see what we can do, because Odd Fellowship's good wherever. I'm all for promoting it. It doesn't matter where it is. Our world needs more Odd Fellowship. We're more good in the world. And I truly do think there's going to be an upswing. It's going to be some heartache, right? You have older lodges and membership that's dying out, but I do think there's hope. And I have two young boys. I have Parker's 9 and Drew is 6. I take them everywhere. They're my Odd Fellows in training. They actually have a shirt that says that. And they love it. We're creating memories. And I really do think the more that we involve our youth, the more we involve younger people, the more we do in the community and get out there and show that, hey, we're odd and we're here. I think there's going to be more growth. I really do think there's hope in our jurisdiction.
It's funny you bring up your relative youth in this organization, which has a tendency to be a little older. It makes me wonder if you're planning to complete the trifecta of becoming a grand patriarch and then a department commander.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe. We'll see. Mm-hmm. One thing at a time.
Yeah. Well, is there anything else that either of you would like to share with us about your experiences with getting the new lodge started?
I would like to say real quick, I would agree with what Brother Stevenson just said. I'm kind of a glasses is half full kind of guy. I do think that things like Odd Fellowship are on the upswing. I think they will grow. I don't think it'll happen overnight. It won't be super fast, but I think it can and will happen.
And how about you, Grandmaster? Anything else you want to add?
Are we under the good of the order, or
not yet?
No, I truly think that there's going to be an upswing. I really do see a lot of potential. I hate to keep going back to Plano Lodge, right? Because I really do care about everyone in my jurisdiction. But of the 41 members that we have, I would say that the average age is under 45. You know, and we're all active. We're excited to be there. And we're doing great things. And Waxahachie Lodge has a youthful presence, and they're doing a lot of good stuff in their community. Greater Houston number 6. They're a little bit more formal because most of their members are Masons, and there's been some crossover. But they're getting excited about Odd Fellowship, and they're bringing other new members in. They're doing a phenomenal job. There's so many lodges. I could go down the list. I really do think there's an upswing, and I'm seeing a lot more youthful members. I'm thinking about our Grand Lodge session that we had in not too long ago, and there were a lot of younger members there for the first time in several years.
That's fantastic. Well, with that, we'll proceed to our closing segment, the Odd Podge, where we get to share whatever it is we feel like sharing. I'm going to go first. And Grandmaster, we'll follow protocol. You can go last. My Odd Podge is about an event that was held the first weekend in April. I spoke previously on earlier episodes about attending the Northwest Odd Fellow and Rebecca Association meeting in Idaho, and what a great job the lodge did in Idaho that acted as our host, how informative it was, what an enjoyable experience it was, and how great it was to see and hear the voices and interests of the younger members who had recently joined, who attended that meeting, and how they were taken very seriously and given a great deal of consideration during that meeting. Well, if I hadn't been at the Northwest meeting, I would have been in the Tri-Cities in Washington, specifically Kennewick, because the Eastern Star chapter in Kennewick organized a really great event, which I think has a lot of potential for helping out Odd Fellowship and other fraternal groups. This Star chapter organized a fraternal fair where they booked a room at the public library And they invited all the fraternal groups in that area. So they had a Masonic Lodge, they had a Star Chapter. I think they had a couple other appendant Masonic bodies. The Odd Fellows were represented there. Elks, Eagles, Moose, and I think a couple of the service clubs like Rotary were there. They had a fraternal fair, and the catch to get people interested was they said, if you have some weird piece of jewelry you don't understand that's been passed down in your family and you want to find out what it is, bring it to the fraternal fair and we will tell you what it is. And it was a very successful event. Attendance was not quite as high as they had hoped for, but media coverage was fantastic. Because when you do a public event like that, you can do a media event and you can send out press releases to all the radio and TV stations, the newspapers, the neighborhood blogs. You post it in your local subreddit. You put it on your local Facebook group. And you publicize this to let people know about it. And they actually got the local TV station to come down and do a story about the fraternal fair and put it on TV, that there is this interest and all these groups are available and you can come down and find out about any of them. So a really fantastic event. And I really want to thank Sister Penny Curtis from Bothell Lodge number 124 here in Washington, who made the drive over the mountains to Eastern Washington to attend the fraternal fair and represent the Odd Fellows there. So great event. I highly recommend, if you have a small lodge and you can't put on an event by yourself, look at partnering with other fraternal groups in your area to do something like the fraternal fair, and start reinvigorating fraternalism in your area. All right, who wants to go next for the Odd Podge? Brother Mike, how about you?
I'm going to change topics again because it's my prerogative. This time I'm not going to bring up something Odd Fellows because I usually do that. This time I'm doing something different. 25 years ago, I had wanted to get a motorcycle, but I got a puppy instead and couldn't take the puppy with me on the bike when I was living and working in DC at that time. And one thing after another, I just never got one because something would always come up. But I did get a motorcycle and I got my license and I passed my test and I'm tootling all around. And I want to throw out there, in case any of you are listening, I've been trying to get in touch with the Odd Fellows Riders Association that's based in Ohio. And I've not had any luck on Facebook Messenger or email. So if any of them are listening, please contact the Grand Secretary of West Virginia, because we have people here who might be interested in starting a chapter in our jurisdiction of your organization.
Wow, that sounds like a lot of fun. Got yourself a motorcycle now.
Awesome.
Excellent. And if we got any listeners from the Riders Association, get in touch with Brother Mike. You can even email us at the show, the number 3, linksoddcast@gmail.com.
And see, it still somewhat ended up being partially Odd Fellows, because I've been trying to get this Odd Fellows Riders Association, but I was, you know, it's more personal. I'm enjoying tootling around on a motorcycle safely with all my gear, you know, the padded pants, the whole deal. I'm 50. I'm not 20.
Yeah.
So I love how Odd Fellowship kind of gives us that last little push needed to maybe pursue something that we've been wanting to do. And if that was like the little need you needed or the little push you needed to finally be like, you know what? I do deserve this motorcycle. I do deserve this in my life. And I think that's awesome. And I feel like Odd Fellowship brings a lot of that for me. And so my Odd Podge is about the updated version of the district deputy's guide that we had released last year through the Heart and Hand Institute. And so there is a modified cover that is all new, and there are a couple new drawings in it as well to accompany the new writings. And there is in the foreword or introduction that was written by Toby, there is a quite a jubilant, triumphant little caricature of Toby that was added. So I'm not going to show you what it looks like online. You're going to have to buy it and check it out and see what it looks like. But it's a very, very useful book. It's about 45 pages, and it's it's May. Is it May 1st when the new updated version is coming out?
Yes, May 1st is the release date for the new District Deputies Guide. And it does include all the information to make it applicable to the Rebecca Assembly. So we've essentially doubled our potential markets right there. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. Brother William, is there something that you might like to share for the Odd Podge?
Sure. Towards the end of last month, when we have two stated meetings a month, after our second stated meeting, one of our members is, he and his wife chair the Brazos Valley Relay for Life to fight against cancer. And we decided as a lodge, to go out there and to participate. We set up a table. As I said, a lot of our members work at a sign shop. One of our members made us a really nice banner with the three chain links and the words Brazos Valley Lodge. But, we went out and we just sold bottles of water and donated all the proceeds to the Relay for Life. And this was our first thing that we've done of, you know, going out into the community and making ourselves known. And it was particularly special to me that we chose this one because it was right at a year ago that I lost my mother to cancer. So I'm glad that this was something our lodge got to be a part of.
That sounds like a really wonderful activity for a new lodge to do. Thank you so much for doing that and for telling us about it, brother.
Certainly. Thank you.
And now, Grandmaster, if you would speak.
Thank you, Brother Toby. We had talked offline a little bit about my journey, and I just wanted to share that a little bit in more detail. So for any of our listeners or those interested in Odd Fellowship or our brothers and sisters that think, yikes, you know, I want to get involved, but there is no way I can get involved with Grand Lodge or be a district deputy or a grand chaplain or whatever. I just want to let you know that it might seem daunting, but it's possible. I'm an introvert by nature. I was scared to death of public speaking. And I just like to serve. That's the whole reason I really joined Odd Fellowship was I wanted the fellowship and I wanted to make a difference in the community. I was always in the back, in the kitchen, cleaning things, helping people, setting things up for events, and you name it, I was there. But far as, you know, being a degree captain for ritual, I was always very nervous. But through my experience in Odd Fellowship, I have gained confidence, I have found my voice, and I progressed through the chairs. One thing led to another. Wow, there's no way it could be Noble Grand. Well, okay, Noble Grand. Okay, well, there's no way it could be a Grand Officer. Oh, wow. Or a District Deputy or Elected Officer. And here I am, and I'm telling you, it's possible. If you care about the order and you want to do good, you can do it. Don't be scared. I'm 44. I'm the Grand Master of Texas, and has been the greatest honor and experience so far in my life. I care about our order, and you can do it too. Don't give up. And before I turn it over, I just want to give a shout out to one of our listeners that listens to every episode. Just Brother Justin Van Wee. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I also want to say thank you to my counterpart, my Rebecca Assembly President, Crystal Baker. We have worked really well together so far this term. And also, Brother John Woolsey, the past Grandmaster. We are good friends, and he has given good counsel. But it's been a pleasure to be on this. Thank you so much. I love you, brothers.
Oh, we love you too, brother. And thank you so much for taking your time to come on the show and talk with us. Now, for our next episode, some of you out there might have heard the previous episode where Brother Ainsley and I talked a little bit about the Lord's Prayer. Oh boy, has that ever generated a lot of feedback. Fortunately, it's all been electronic, because if it were actual snail mail that were coming to the Three Links Oddcast production center here, the Postal Service would be very upset at delivering all of those pallets of mail, but very happy for the revenue at the same time. So the next episode, we're going to get everybody together and we are going to talk about some of those responses that we got. There are a lot of very intelligent, very insightful, very well-informed listeners to this podcast, and we've got a wonderful variety of different responses. So we're going to respond to some of those and share some of the information that we've gotten from people. And kind of talk some more about this, because this has turned out to be a very, very interesting subject for many members.
Well, if you haven't yet responded, please do so. We've told you the email address, threelinksoddcast, with the number three at gmail.com. Get it in there. I was not able to make that particular episode, so I have an entire hogshead full of thoughts about that, and I intend to share them, but I don't want to monopolize that episode with my opinions, because that's all they are. So if you have not yet responded and you have thoughts about it, please do so. Even if you think that your thoughts are so common sense, there's no reason why anybody would need to hear them again, because obviously we all agree with you. I think you'll find that a lot of the responses we've gotten probably don't agree with you. So please go ahead and share your thoughts on it, because it's an important topic. And if we're engaged on it, regardless of what you think, that's good for the order. Being engaged is good.
Absolutely. And part of the fun and the function of this podcast is that we get to exchange the ideas from all over the place. You know, we have had responses from some of the most socially and politically liberal bastions of Odd Fellowship. And we've also had some responses from some of the most traditional bastions of Odd Fellowship. And for us, it is so wonderful to see the impact that discussing this one topic is having. So as Mike says, make sure if you've got an opinion about this, you send it to us. We really want to know as much about what all of our listeners think about this. So that'll be our next episode, where we respond to a lot of those comments. And I want to thank all of you for listening to this episode of the Three Links Oddcast. That's all for us. Bye-bye, everybody.